Good morning and welcome to the Tuesday edition of The Morning Show, the first one of the new year with hosts Phil Huff and Julie Calamine.
Good morning, Phil. Happy New Year.
Happy New Year to you, Julie.
And did you notice the beautiful full moon of the new year as you drove in this morning?
I did. The moon set was wonderful. The first moon of this month. We're going to have two moons this month. And I know you now know what the second moon's called.
I do. I know it's a blue moon, and I even know what the first moon is called.
What's the first moon called?
It's called the wolf moon.
Mm-hmm. And how do you know that?
Well, I know that because I was skiing on the night before the full moon, and there were some trivia questions passed around. I didn't know the answer then, but I had to look it up.
We do, and we're going to talk mostly about other things today, but one of our guests here organized a full moon ski the other night, Dr. Celeste Grace, and so maybe we'll even chat a little bit about that. Good morning, Celeste.
Good morning.
And in the studio also with us is her vet tech, Susie Kretschmer. Good morning, Susie.
Good morning.
So first, let's talk about the weather, because that's what's on everybody's mind. It's been a lot of snow lately, and today we have a 60% chance of snow likely. Tonight, snow also likely at 60%. Both today and tonight, highs don't break freezing. We're at a high of 24 today, low of 19 tonight, a high of 26 tomorrow, and a low of 25. So we continue with the snowy forecast on into Thursday night. Friday and Friday night, a 90 to 100% chance of snow. So more snow on the way.
That's why we live here, and it leads to lots of shoveling and lots of snowshoeing, Phil.
Yeah, and cross-country skiing. Got a lot of those in over the last 2 days.
That's right.
So let's turn to the topic at hand. And once again, we have Celeste Grace and Susie Kretschmer here to talk about a little bit about their practice as a veterinarian and vet tech, but also the marvelous work they do overseas in the Dominican Republic.
Good morning, Celeste.
Good morning.
And good morning, Susie.
Good morning.
You're going to be able to tell the difference between Celeste and Susie pretty easily, because Susie, you will notice, is bearing an accent from England, I believe. And didn't you just return from there?
I did. That's right.
Mm-hmm. Yes, you had some family mm-hmm. there. Good for you. And you're back and ready to be interviewed.
Ready.
Very good. We appreciate it. Well, it would be nice if you would both start by telling us a bit about your background. Celeste, tell us about your background, how you decided to become a vet, and how you ended up here in Sandpoint. And then we'll ask the same of Susie.
Thank you, Julie. So I'm one of those, horse-crazy kids and animal-crazy kids. Wanted to be a veterinarian since before I could spell the word correctly. I have that. My mother saved that for me to show me. And so it has always been a lifelong passion, and I fulfilled it, graduated from veterinary school in 1990, so 28 mm-hmm. years ago, and mostly we have worked with horses on the East Coast, and then we moved here in 2011 to get closer to my family, who is in western Montana, and since being here, I've branched out to cover all large animal livestock species, just because there's a need for it in this area, still specializing in horses and lameness, but having a pretty darn good time taking care of all the farm animals.
All the big ones.
Yes.
And Susie, tell us a bit about how you came to be here.
Well, growing up in England, I was raised with stories of James Herriot. And every chance I would get, I would go out with the local large animal vet on calls, which I just fell in love with. And then, I grew up in sheep farming country in England, so always out for the lambing and just always really liked it. I moved to the States to marry an American, and went to school down there in Georgia, where he's from, and went to school for veterinary technology.
Mm. So tell us a little bit about the difference between being a veterinarian and a vet tech.
The veterinary technician program is much the same as a nursing program. We actually did all our classes with the nurses right up until anatomy and physiology, in which case, obviously, we separated quite drastically. But it's a very similar program. It's to become a doctor, you have to have an undergrad 4-year degree after that, and then often specialize. The veterinary technician program usually takes 2 to 3 years. So.
And does every vet have their own special personal vet tech?
I'm so glad you asked that question, because I was going to ask if I could interject something. Not necessarily. And actually, when I started this practice, it was on a shoestring budget, and I couldn't really afford anything. And through a mutual friend, Nikki Plius, I think that's how you pronounce her name, a well-known octogenarian here in town who's a big hiker, I started hiking with her when I first moved here because I didn't have a job. Susie started hiking with her a year later, Nikki introduced us and said to me, you need to hire Susie. And I said, I can't afford to. But I interviewed Susie on a hike in a classic North Idaho way. And I said, well, you can ride around with me for a day or two, but I can't afford you. And she was with me for one day. And I said, I can't afford not to have you. So it's one of those decisions you make. I think for me, it's worth every penny. Other people might not think so. You know, they might be happy to do it by themselves, but she's worth a million.
Wow. Wow. That's a great story.
What a testimony.
Well, I'm interested in knowing a little bit more about, you've told me about your love for horses, but is focusing on equine patients much more complicated or quite different from other sorts of large animal practice?
They are complicated and slightly different in a couple of ways. Number one is they tend to be monetarily more valuable, which is a really awkward thing to say, but people spend millions of dollars sometimes on horses so that they can go around and jump jumps in a ring, which is completely different than the person that has a cow or a sheep or a goat on their farm that actually is worth a lot to them because it's their livelihood, it's their food. Mm-hmm. So that brings into play all sorts of different, the way we treat them becomes a little bit different, unfortunately. And then horses are just looking for ways to get into trouble and looking for ways to die. So that keeps us in business. But I'm always amazed with the other livestock when we come into problems or birthing problems with them. Most of the other animals have a great will to live, and the horses are looking for a way out sometimes.
Oh. Interesting. There's also some farm animals that you'll see here that people might not think of beyond the cows and chickens, dogs, pigs, horses, but there's also llamas and alpacas. Tell us about some of the other ones.
Yeah, we actually run the gamut here. I've seen everything. We've seen everything from alpacas, llamas, yaks. There's a bison farm. There's an elk farm down south. We've treated both of those species. Thanks to my technician, we've treated emus. She volunteered us for that.
I've seen a zebra north of town. I'm not sure if it's still around.
It is. There's one north of Bonner's Ferry, and then there's one towards Hope.
Oh, my.
Oh, wow. Yeah.
So, yeah.
So we're here today to talk a little bit about your work overseas. Tell us about that program.
So this is through a program called Project Samana, and it is a not-for-profit started by two veterinarians in Massachusetts who wanted to do something, wanted to give back with their careers and financially, too. So they... one of them was a big sailor. Every port he sails into, he asks for the local veterinarian just to talk to them. And he went to Samana in the Dominican Republic and said, I'd like to talk to the local vet. And they said, we don't have one. And the Dominican Republic at that point was the second poorest country in the Western Hemisphere. So Northern Hemisphere, Western Hemisphere, whichever. So they decided to start their organization there, and they had a distinct mission to say that they would go down twice a year. They would not just go down there for 3 or 4 years and then just dump everybody after they get people's hopes up. I think it's been over 30 years that they've been doing it. Now we have teams that go down 3 times a year, all volunteer veterinarians, veterinary technicians, veterinary students, and just volunteer to help the locals with the animals.
Okay. And obviously there's a lot of need for volunteer veterinary work in the U.S., but is the need greater outside of our country?
I would say so. That does always get a little bit controversial. I think anytime you're volunteering, whether it's with humans or animals, what about the local people? And I absolutely understand that and get that. But when you go down to these areas and you see the poverty that they are dealing with and the way that the animals are, especially the large animals, are used for work, they really need our help. I mean, we can do so much with so little down there, and they are so appreciative. It's amazing.
And so you've been doing it for quite some time.
Yes.
How did you first get involved?
One of the founders of the organization, Dr. Jay Merriam, came and gave a lecture where I was working in New York, and at the end of his lecture, he always spends 5 minutes saying, hey, this is this project that we started. And I looked at the pictures and thought, wow, I really want to do that. So.
And Susie, how was it that Celeste was able to drag you along?
Well, it didn't take too much convincing. I've always loved travel. And So when she told me about this program and invited me to come along with her, I jumped at the chance.
And how long have you been joining her?
This last November was my third year.
Oh, very good. Very good. Well, why don't you tell us a little bit about a bit about what the entire your entire experience is like. How does it begin? Then what happens? What's a day, even a day in the life of the Vets Without Borders would be interesting.
I'll start and then transfer it over to Susie.
All right.
So we usually, there's two teams. There's a small animal team and a large animal team. And the large animal team is, our ability to go out to the farms is dictated by the weather. And sometimes that can be really tricky down in the Dominican Republic because of the rains. It can flood us out. But we start by loading up a pickup truck and with all of the supplies that we think we need. We have an assistant or liaison down there who usually travels with us because some of these farms require crossing rivers, going over hill and dale, very difficult to get to. So she's always with us, but we pack everything we need. The students and the technicians usually go into the back of the pickup truck. That's their favorite place, and head out to various farms. And I will turn it over to Susie.
Yeah, we at the different farms, we do a whole range of activities. We do a lot of castrations for the working mules and the horses. And then we'll treat lamenesses, abscesses, wounds. There's a lot of saddle problems, saddle sores. So we'll see a whole range of things. Celeste will do all the diagnosing. And as a technician, I'm kind of just trying to help wherever I can, drawing up medications,
right,
doing some restraint, that kind of thing.
Is it mainly castrations or just a mix of everything?
It's mostly castrations, probably 70%, would you say?
Mm-hmm.
So,
And why is that important? That's something that the residents aren't able to. It seems that that might be something they'd be capable of, but they aren't.
No, you can do it, but the risk of doing it the old-fashioned way, which might be to lay the horse down and tie them up, and then just try to remove the testicles. There's a risk of bleeding and infection, and we carry the drugs down there. We have nice drugs. We do the surgeries just like we would do up here in the States. And the other thing that happens with both the technicians and the veterinary students, we have such great, passionate people down there. I think it just selects for that, but they get experience. We have the vet students and the technicians in there doing this, helping out with these surgeries and doing things that they're not doing in the States. So great practice for them, and it's totally supervised by me, so there's no... we're not going to put the animals at risk because those animals are incredibly important for these people.
Right. So are you, what I'm understanding is that they might learn some techniques from you all that they can use in between your visits. Certain.
The local Dominicans? Mm-hmm. Yes, that is definitely part of it, is trying to educate them. And obviously not so much with the medical part of it, but as far as saddle sores go, nutrition, parasitology, that's the education that we try to pass on to them. And I think in the years that I've been going, and certainly since the start of it, if you speak to the veterinarians that have been down there since the beginning of it, the condition of all of the animals, both large and small, have improved dramatically. It's amazing.
It must be satisfying for you to come back and see the general population is looking better and healthier.
Yes, very.
Yeah, that's great. I'm interested. I wanted to back up just a moment and ask you about the travel from home to the Dominican Republic. You mentioned a bit about it, but is it sort of planes, trains, automobiles? Is it really, you don't just fly into your town? No. How long does it take? What is that journey like?
We usually end up having to you either have to take the red eye to the East Coast and then get down to the Dominican Republic, and then we all rent cars where you have to spend the night somewhere. We have to arrive in the DR during daylight hours because the driving down there is atrocious. And after, when it gets dark, the roads are full of animals, humans, you name it. Nobody has lights on their mopeds. Nobody has lights or reflector gear on anything. So it's very nerve-wracking driving, and we actually ended up driving in the dark this year a little bit. But it usually takes 20 hours.
Oh, my.
More than that, yeah.
And if I've already asked or Phil's asked this question, pardon me, but for how long are you in the Dominican Republic each time?
We're there for a week.
Okay, a week. I'll bet you get a lot done in that week.
We do. We have long days that are pretty fully packed.
Yes. Well, tell me about the sort of the financing or the funding. I'm wondering, are you volunteering not only your time, but also your expenses to travel to the Republic?
We are, yes. And it is one of those checks that you write that just ends up being, I never regret it. And I've made the decision with my practice to cover my technicians' expenses. And I think that's something we're trying to encourage more veterinarians to do, because it's just, it's refreshing. It gives them a different perspective. It's,
can imagine. And supplies too, are those also something that you bring along and pay for?
Some of them I pay for. Some of them we get a little bit of a donation from the pharmaceutical companies. Mm-hmm. I've had donations from Barnes, local horse people here. Have done wonderful donations for me. Some have given financial donations just to the organization. It is a 501c3. And then some of the veterinary clinics also save things. We'll take down expired drugs. We have no problem with that. So things that people just aren't using or expired, we have huge suitcases on the way down.
So how large is the program beyond, of course, the two of you? There's others who are going.
We usually have about 20 to 25 people down there, veterinarians, technicians, students, spouses.
And you rotate in or out, or is everybody there in mass to help support each other and spread out?
You mean during the week?
Yeah, well, is it focused on 1 week, or is it 20 different weeks in the year? Each week has a vet go?
Nope, it is right now. We actually have 3 weeks during the year, and it was historically just 2 weeks. And it was back before there was any real regular communication down there. So the deal was, it was the first full week in June, and it was the first full week in November. And everybody knew that. And in fact, what they would do the week before we arrived, they'd drive down the streets with their loudspeakers in their trucks, and they'd say, the American vets are coming, the American vets are coming. And that was how it was advertised. Now, of course, everybody has cell phones, but we have kept it to those same two dates. And then a third date has happened in September. Okay. So.
And so how many of those do you go? Do you go twice a year then?
No, I just do November right now. I'm in charge of the large animal portion for November.
Mm-hmm. And I'm interested in knowing a little more about the organization, how they help you, what they do, how many veterinarians are involved, that sort of thing.
Well, there is we have a board. I sit on the board, actually, and we try to... There's probably about 10 veterinarians, I would say, that have been doing this off and on since the start of it. And there's also some technicians, actually, that have been coming back year after year. So sometimes it's a really well-oiled machine. Sometimes it's a little bit squeaky in the beginning. But the board meets two or three times a year, where there's always communication via email. And, you know, we're always trying to figure out how to garner more volunteers. Sometimes there's waiting lists that are really long, and then other times, just depending on the year, we are looking for people. But more often than not, there's a waiting list.
And you're seeing some of the same people, animals, year over year.
Oh, yes, which is really fun. And that's when it's really handy. I, embarrassingly enough, I don't speak Spanish. German was my language growing up, and I've been trying to speak Spanish, but Susie does. And it's just wonderful because people recognize us or her, and she's able to communicate with them. And I will one of these days.
Now, I want to hear some Spanish with that British accent.
That's right.
She's being very generous. I haltingly speak a little bit of Spanish.
It was enough to get me out of a speeding ticket one time.
Well, I would say that's good. Very good. Well, you're not the only organization that helps throughout the world. There are more than one organization. How did you, I understand a little bit about how you selected your organization, but there are others, and they don't all focus on domestic animals. Some are even wild animals, but you made your selection.
I did make my selection, and I guess I liked the way that they were focused on their mission, which is to help the animals down there, and they keep it to the animals. They've always told us, it's tempting to bring down toys and clothes and candy to the kids. The kids are adorable, and a lot of the people are so in need and so desperately want this kind of stuff. But they've said, we're here for the animals and stick to that. And we're coming back year after year. So I like that consistency, and I like to be able to follow through with that. It would be fun to go to Morocco or to Mexico, and maybe I will someday. But right now, I just like to support this organization.
So are there other projects that the organization runs in other countries or other organizations that run projects in other countries?
Other organizations that run projects. And one of the things that has come out of this one is something called equitarianism. So just like humanitarianism, this is for horses. And one of the doctors that started Project Samana, again, Dr. Mariam, I think he coined the term, or he was part of coining this term, but that is an umbrella term that then helps other organizations go into other countries. So if you want to find out how to do this, then you can go to the Equitarians, which is a project, which is an organization through one of our big organizations, and they have lots of guidelines on how to help start this type of a program.
Oh, interesting. And the animals that you're helping, I know they're large animals, but are you helping not mainly horses, or it must be a mix? And tell us a little bit more about those individuals.
Well, so every week that we go down, the vets and the techs are actually split. And so we have a small animal team, which is focused in one building. Everyone brings their animals to that building. And they're dealing with dogs and cats mostly. The large animal team that goes out, we mostly see horses and mules. Those are the main animals used for working, for transporting goods. But then we have definitely seen some pigs. They have cows there. They have goats. And those are usually more, you know, food animals. And so usually have shorter lifespans. But if one has been injured or care can be provided, we do see those as well.
Okay. Mm-hmm.
Are there differences in the way you treat an animal that's being raised for food versus one that's not? I'm thinking in terms of what medicines you can give it or other care.
Oh, yeah. So that's the same here. That actually was probably one of the biggest learning curves that I had to go through when I moved here. The United States does not eat horses, so you don't have to worry about the medication. But any other species, any drug we put into their body has to be taken into consideration for either milk withdrawal guidelines or meat withdrawal guidelines. Mm. And the same in the Dominican Republic.
Mm-hmm. And do they eat horses in the Dominican Republic?
They don't, actually.
Okay.
And we did have it's a little bit of an issue when one dies or has to be euthanized because they've got to dig a hole and it's by hand. We had a situation this year with a horse that had a broken leg, and, you know, it takes a concerted effort to be able to coordinate the euthanasia, the burying.
What are some of the other differences in care? Or are there differences in care when you go to the Dominican versus here in North Idaho?
Well, we certainly don't. We're not so cavalier about throwing things away. In the United States, we were all taught, and we still practice, sterile technique. Everything is clean. Everything is new. The trash that gets thrown away in hospitals and veterinary clinics is mind-blowing. It's very sad. I think it's something we need to work on in this country. But there's a reason for it, infection and spread of contagious diseases. But when you go down there, you can't afford to throw everything out, not only because you don't have constant supply, but the trash that's created is an issue. So we reuse, we're as clean as we possibly can, but it's just a little bit of a different philosophy, and it works.
It's good. And just in terms of the people that you're helping and education, are you finding that over the years they're improving their animal husbandry techniques? Are you helping them in that area?
Yeah, I would say so. Definitely with the small animals, we've noticed that the dogs will start coming in very well groomed. They wear collars, and people are very proud of their dogs and how well they look after them. With the large animals, we've definitely noticed a change in the horses that are used for mostly tourism, for transporting tourists to waterfalls or back and forth. And those horses now are definitely starting to be more well looked after, groomed, better fed. So, yeah, it's really nice to see.
Do their eyes light up? Do the horses and dogs remember you?
There are definitely some dogs. We try and go running in the mornings, and we have a little following of dogs that come running with us. And I've noticed, you know, this is only my third year, but we see the same dogs that come running with us, and they're always very excited. So that's cute.
I'm just curious, do they bark in Spanish?
I'd say, you know, I've traveled quite extensively, and dogs are dogs all over the world.
The bark's the same. Well, if you're just tuning in, this is KRFY. 88.5, listener-supported radio for North Idaho. This morning we're talking with Dr. Celeste Grace and vet tech Susie Kretschmar about their experiences in the Dominican Republic, practicing their veterinarian overseas for the benefit of those in the Dominican. We're going to take a short song break here, and then we're going to come back with more. We're back with Dr. Celeste Grace and vet tech Susie Kretschmar. We're talking about veterinary practices overseas.
And for those of you just joining us, this is the KRFY Morning Show, listener-supported radio for Northern Idaho, the Idaho Panhandle. And if you're only able to hear part of our morning show today, know that you can listen to our podcast later on. I'll be loading it up right after the show. And we are here with Celeste Grace and Susie Kretschmar talking about their experience in the Dominican Republic, working with large animals and followed by small animals throughout the area. And we're wanting to come back around to a couple of topics. And one that I've been wondering about as we've been chatting is what you both like best about your work, both here in Sandpoint and also in the Dominican Republic.
I love to be outside. And so working as a large animal veterinary technician means we go, our work in Sandpoint, we go about an hour in all directions from Sandpoint. We're outside every day, rain, shine, snow, whatever. So being outside is great. Working with animals, helping animals, I love to do that.
And you're mobile vets, yes? You're not in an office. Tell us a little bit about that.
Well, we have a truck that has all our supplies loaded into it. It has digital x-rays. It has our dental equipment. It has ultrasound, all our medications. And so we can really take the clinic to the farm.
So no, you don't take the truck down there. You must be working with some local folks on that kind of logistical stuff.
Yeah, we have to rent a pickup truck down there, and we basically have plastic tubs that stay in a facility. And when we get there, we go through all the plastic tubs, make sure we have everything we think we need. They get loaded into the back of the pickup truck, and along with the students and the technicians, and we drive that to the farm.
I see. And Celeste, we need to hear from you what you like best about your work, both here and in the Dominican.
Well, I'm definitely on Susie's side as far as loving to be outside. And I've always, obviously, I have a passion for the treating the animals. I love not only the compassionate side of it, when you feel like you can really help some animal, and by default, their owner, also help them through an injury or an illness. I also like the science part of it, the challenge. It's a puzzle. It's trying to figure things out. So that's the same. That's probably more important here than the Dominican Republic. The Dominican Republic, you just feel like you're going down and helping people that are incredibly grateful, hopefully helping the animals for the long term. And honestly, one of my favorite things is the group of people that goes down there. Every veterinary student that I've ever encountered down there, or I should say 99% of them, have been so passionate, so willing to work. They are smart, they're game, they have it in their hearts. And not every veterinary student is like that, but it seems like the ones that go down there are. And I come back just with renewed faith for the future of our profession.
It sounds like you might forge bonds or friendships that you bring back to the States.
Definitely. And a lot of the veterinary students I tell them, feel free to call me, try to get, if they need any advice, especially thinking about going into large animal practice. We've always had a problem keeping veterinarians in large animal practice. It's not as easy to make a living as small animal. And I say it's not as easy only because you do have to deal with the elements. You know, on a day like today, if you're working small animal, you go into an air controlled environment and we're out there getting thrown around by large animals. So I try to be a supportive consult for them, to encourage them that they can do it.
And those of you who are listening aren't seeing our two guests this morning, but neither one is really tall. You're strong, but you're diminutive, I'll have to say.
Don't underestimate them by size.
No, I know it, but it's a testimony to the ability to be any size and do work on heavy work. So I'm impressed.
Yeah. And I think I do. We get that question sometimes. And certainly if you're looking at a 1500 pound horse, it actually doesn't matter if you're a 250 pound man or woman, you still are not going to overpower them. So there's an art to it and there's chemistry to it. We have lots of good drugs to help us. And then sometimes our size and our demeanor is helpful, because some horses are are put off by large, aggressive people. So we can come in and kind of sweet talk them. And then, you know, there's a lot of species that I have an advantage. My hand is small, my arm is small. And if there's a sheep giving birth or a goat giving birth, I have a huge advantage.
So you're carrying drugs for the animals and yourselves.
Yes, ibuprofen.
Ah, yes.
That's right.
That's a classic anywhere. Tell us about some of the other things you bring back. You bring back these relationships. What of the experiences that you've had? What else do you bring back that informs your practice here?
I think it just is refreshing, and I'll have Susie speak on this too, but it's a refreshing week to be able to go down there, and their problems are different than the problems here. And we don't have, there's no follow-up, there's no telephone calls, there's no emails, there's no medical records, which you could argue is good or bad, but sometimes that's the part of our job that can get a little bit cumbersome, is the amount of time that you have to spend on that stuff. A lot of it's for legal purposes, but to be able to go down there and just do your job, you are going out to the farm and helping these animals and coming back at the end of the day, and that's the end of your day. So I think it's refreshing, and I do get a different perspective sometimes when I come back here and think, you know, this is, there's a lot of red tape sometimes in medical practice here. So
I would think so. Something that Celeste mentioned during the break was that the particular group that you're working with is really special. They really go above and beyond, and that's made a difference for you. Maybe you could speak to that.
Yeah, and I think I talked a little bit about it, but they started it right. The two gentlemen, the two doctors that started it, thought about it. They thought about it for the long term. They've been involved with it since the beginning, which I think speaks highly to them. The people that they have encouraged to join, they, you know, we all follow their same guidelines, and I think it's just created a compassionate, long-lasting group that also other groups look up to, especially in the horse world, to say, okay, you guys have done this, and it's been successful. How did you do it, and what guidelines can we follow?
Yes, a little more effective than some other organizations with all of their experience.
Definitely. Mm-hmm.
So let's hear from Susie. So what are the experiences you bring back that helps you in your professional work here?
I think just being out of the country is always a good experience for anyone. Sometimes when I've gone before, students or technicians, it's their first time ever out of the United States. So that's just a great experience to see a completely different culture, different environment. So that's always a benefit. For me, I try to spend at least one of the days that we're down there in the small animal clinic, which is good practice for me. It's a good refresher. Getting some hands-on, placing catheters, drawing blood, whatever's needed in the small animal, because mostly here we just do large.
Sure. And I'm hearing about vets and vet techs, and it sounds like just plain old volunteers aren't really needed there. You're not flying folks that just have the ability to, you know, carry things, this or that. You need some skills.
We do have both. They try to make sure that the majority of the people are trained in some way, but there's a few people that have come back year after year that are either a spouse or a good friend of somebody, and they actually are quite useful.
Hmm. All mm-hmm. right.
So back into the country, you've got stuff you're leaving there, you're storing, so there's folks that are tending after it. Tell us about those partnerships. Volunteered partnerships, arranged partnerships by your organization, other local vets?
So that's a big change from the beginning of this when there were no veterinarians in Samana. There now is one local veterinarian. He graduated from the Dominican Veterinary School, and he's been there for 3 or 4 years. So he runs a practice down there as best he can, and his facility is where we can store things, and he can actually get some medications for us. We used to have to basically import everything, and he's able to be a connection for us. There is a woman named Kim who has been our liaison from the beginning. She actually runs the whale watching tours down there. She's been instrumental in protecting some of these whales. It's a huge tourist industry. From January to April, the whales come down from Cape Cod and they calve in the Samana Bay. So it's beautiful and wonderful, but the locals didn't understand 20 years ago about staying away from the whales. If you stayed away from them, you'd actually keep them alive and have better tourism in the long run. So Kim was very instrumental in getting that turned around. And then when she's not doing whale watching, she is our liaison, which is why there is no project that goes down between January and April, because it's nonstop whales. But my goal is to go down there sometime and see those calves.
I thought you were going to say you want to go treat them.
I wouldn't mind doing that either. No,
that would be a large animal.
Yes.
That
would.
Are they volunteers or are they paid staff?
Kim does almost all of it volunteer, although we're trying to get money to her in various ways. And the veterinarian down there is paid. He's actually paid. He has a stipend coming from the country because it's an underserved area. So they actually are giving him some money directly.
And who do you think learns more from one another, your resident vet learning from you or you learning from him?
Well, I think he obviously has insight into the local customs and the local people, so he can help us from that perspective. He still is a new veterinarian, and the veterinary facilities and the veterinary education in the United States is quite top-notch. So, you know, we've got the schools behind us, and then most of the veterinarians down there, I've been doing it for 28 years. A lot of them have been doing it longer than I, so we have lots of life experience to help him. So it's definitely a partnership, give and take. I think you always have to be careful when you go into a different culture that you don't go down there saying, you know, I'm from the United States and this is how we do it, because it doesn't necessarily work that way.
Very true.
Yeah, lots to learn both ways. Mm-hmm. It'd be interesting to have him come up sometime.
That would be very fun.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Mm-hmm. The island you're on sounds like it was not hit as hard as many in the region during the hurricane season recently. Tell us about what did happen there and how it impacted this fall's work.
They are used to hurricanes, just as all of the Caribbean islands are. And they did have the two big Category 5s were headed directly to Samana, actually. And at the last minute, they steered off, they said, 60 kilometers offshore, which was enough to lessen the impact. But they are used to it. They know how to tie their roofs on, so they have metal galvanized roofs on the houses that they have, and they literally tie them on during these hurricanes. They have mudslides all the time. The couple of the years that we've been there, there's been terrible flooding to the point that we can't get to places, but they know how to deal with it. So they did dodge the big bullet this year, and they were very grateful, because it would have been a catastrophe. We would not have gone down if those had hit, because they would be focusing on picking their own lives up, not necessarily castrating horses.
Oh, for sure. Mm-hmm. Well, I've heard about all the great things that you're doing and why you go there, but what does make you keep going back year after year? 28 years?
I've only been doing it about 10 years. I've been a veterinarian for 28 years. Yes.
I'm sorry, I had that turned around, but 10 years is still a long time.
Yes, it's a little bit hard to put your finger on. I think it's just energizing. It's definitely hard work. It's dirty work. But there is something about it that just gets to your soul. You really feel like you're doing something good and you are helping. And I love the people down there. Mm-hmm. And Susie didn't hesitate the second year when I said, "Do you want to go back down?"
Oh, yes. Because our listeners may be interested in helping out, it sounds like there might be room for a volunteer here and there, but there may be other ways they can help out. Can you tell us how that would work?
So there is a website. You could either go to projectsamana.org or .com. I think if you go to .org, unfortunately, it guides you to .com. It is a not-for-profit, even though it's a .com. It was a problem with how it was first set up, but projectsamana.org or .com, and there's a Facebook page.
Sure, and that's Samana spelled?
S-A-M as in Mary, A, N as in Nancy, A.
Okay.
And I asked something clarifying when we were on our music break. The Samana's the name of the project. It's also the name of the location you're going to.
Correct.
And is it registered here in the U.S. as a 501c3? I think you mentioned earlier it was.
Yes, it is.
Excellent.
And I'm interested in talking a bit more about donations, because it seems to me that when one donates in another country, sometimes it goes a little further than we might think it would here. Can you tell us a bit about that?
Oh, I would say definitely. And especially this organization, because everybody that goes down from the United States is paying their own way and volunteering. So there is no money going to any of the organization or any people. So the money that goes to the project. We will use sometimes to purchase equipment. We've bought a float to file down horses' teeth. They have anesthesia machines. Small animal has a lot more overhead, I would say, than large animal does. So it goes a long way, and things aren't thrown out down there either, so it lasts.
Well, I guess we're getting close to our conclusion.
Any success stories that you want to, any anecdotes or major success stories from the 10 years plus that you've been there?
I guess one case that I really enjoyed watching and being a part of was it was a mule that was a salt carrier, actually. So it would, every day it would hike up and down and up and down this quite steep hill with heavy bags of salt. And it had just developed these wounds all along its back. And some of them were quite deep and just causing a lot of pain and a lot of distress to this animal. And we actually got to go and treat it. And as we were cleaning it, you could just see in this mule's eyes just how grateful it was. I just felt so good. So being part of that kind of treatment is really gratifying and great experience.
It's Celeste?
Well, I don't know if this isn't the most gratifying, but it's actually, it's something that happens down there that doesn't happen up here, and we don't always cure them of it. But the horses will get mango pits stuck in their esophagus because the mangoes, these animals eat mangoes. And
they're big.
And they're big. And this is a very interesting thing. The mules don't get the mango pits stuck. And it's not because they have bigger esophagi. It's because they don't swallow the pit. Horses swallow the pit. And that's actually a difference. And mules just, on the whole, do better down there. They do better with less nutrition. They're tougher. And they're a little bit smarter.
So I'm really glad you brought that, because there is one final question for us non-farmers. Tell us the difference between a horse, a mule, and a donkey.
The donkey crosses with a horse to get a mule. And mules are sterile, so you'll never have mules be bred to produce anything.
And there's we were talking before the show, there's a shortage of donkeys right now?
There is. Well, in general, I mean, I'm not sure why people like horses better, but they do. And even in the Dominican Republic, it's more of a status symbol if you have a horse. So they, over the years, they want the horse. So if your tourists come in and they want to ride to the waterfall, they think that their tour company is going to be used more if they've got these beautiful horses as opposed to the mules. But in fact, we've been trying to get them to create more mules. And by that, Kim, the liaison that I spoke of, always has a jack, which is an intact male donkey, standing on her farm that she is willing to let the locals breed female horses to, so that they get mules, which will then serve them better.
So there's a way around the donkey shortage there.
Yes.
Well, you don't get any more mules if you don't have donkeys.
The things we'll learn here on the morning show. We want to thank you both for coming in today, Dr. Celeste Grace and Vet Tech Susie Kretschmeyer. It's been a wonderful experience learning about your work in the Dominican.
Thanks for having us, and thanks for this great community radio station. We love it.
Yes, we do.
You are very welcome. Yeah. Very interesting. On to a song break, Bill.
We're going to segue into the community calendar section here with a little bit more about Donkey in My Soul, the David Waxman Group. Appropriate for today's show.
Especially knowing what we now know about donkeys, mules, and horses. Thank you, Phil.
Yeah, well, thank Dr. Celeste Grace.
That's right.
A fountain of knowledge.
Well, interesting and expiring, I think.
It is. And speaking of new things, it's a new year. We want to thank those listeners, listener members who contributed during our year-end donation drive. It is not too late. It may be too late for your 2017 taxes, but it's not too late to support community radio. That's in vogue any time of the year. You can go to krfy.org and use the secure donate button, and it'll go to our PayPal site. You can send a check to P.O. Box 2465, Sandpoint, Idaho, 83864. We've got some more morning shows coming up this week, Julie.
Yes, we do.
Tomorrow morning, join hosts Chris Bessler and Susie Perez. Their guest will be local print editors. Oh, excuse me, that's last week's. I'm not sure why that's still on our reader board. But tomorrow, join hosts Chris Bessler and Susie Perez. Their guest will be District 1 State Legislator Sage Dixon. Sage will talk about what's on the agenda for the upcoming House legislative term beginning this month. That's the Idaho legislation. At 8 a.m. right here at 88.5 KRFY. Then on Thursday, join Jack Peterson and Jim Healy. Their guest will be local author Bill Collier, who will be talking about his book, CIA Superpilot Spills the Beans. That sounds interesting.
That does sound interesting. And Phil and I will be joining you again next Tuesday. And our guest that morning, well, we've got great guests that morning, will be playing a pre-recorded interview with Rich Landers, newly retired outdoor writer from the Spokesman.
The Spokesman Review.
Yes, yep.
He'll be talking about his upcoming appearance here in Sandpoint on Saturday, January 13th.
I always think Spokane Spokesman, and I'm like, what is the last part of that name? Yeah. And then after that, we'll be talking with the folks from Scotchman Peak Wilderness, Britta Meyerly, and newly hired Nancy, talking about the Winter Tracks program. Yeah, that'll be interesting, too.
Pretty full show. We're going to hit January running with morning shows.
Yes, we will. And let's not forget about Bernie Mosier on Wednesday mornings. Light listening, early.
He's always a good one. One of the many programs we offer
of our live programming, live music.
What else do we have coming up, Julie?
Well, we've just gone through Christmas and the new year, Phil, so you know that things might die down a bit. And so we don't have a ton, but we have a few interesting things coming up. There are the usuals, the trivia night, the night out karaoke, the sort of things that we're used to every week at the local taverns. But additionally, we have on the 3rd, that would be tomorrow night, a bike night movie. Greasy Fingers Bikes Repair is hosting a bike movie night, and that's starting at 6 p.m. It's going to be every Wednesday in January, and the bike shop will be showing movies with bikes in them. So I guess that's a broad category.
You do. I don't think there's any local specific events, but it used to be that the first Saturday in January was recognized as Winter Trails Day, much like the first Saturday in June is National Trails Day in the summer.
Nice.
And so, yeah, lots of people get out and they snowshoe or cross-country ski, and there certainly is a lot of snow on the ground to go snowshoeing right now.
Yes, that's true. We've both experienced the heavy, fun snow of snowshoeing.
Yeah. And if you're new to the sport, there's great snowshoeing available up at Schweitzer and in various places around town if you get access to any of the trailheads. And as we were talking about earlier, the Sandpoint Nordic Club grooms an area here in Sandpoint, the University of Idaho property. You can go out and check it out there.
Yes, and it's a pretty easy sport to learn. Yeah. Now, if you're fresh in from snowshoeing or skiing and tired, there's another movie you might want to watch. That's Three Billboards Outside Ebbing, Missouri. That'll be showing the 4th through the 7th at the Panada. It's an interesting show. I know Frances McDormand is in that. It's had some high reviews. Additionally, we've got on the 4th, intermediate to advanced bridge. For those of you wanting to learn about bridge, well, who know a bit about bridge and would but like to learn more. Yeah. Then that would be something you might look into. It's going to be at the community hall, and if you'd like to know more about it, get in touch with Sandpoint Parks and Recs. Additionally, the 5th through the 26th, know that there is the Junior Starlight Series, and that's Friday nights in January up on Schweitzer. It's a racing program for kids.
Well, that about wraps it up for today. If you only caught part of the show and want to hear the rest of it, of course, there'll be a podcast available later on today at KRFY.org. We're going to go